Hi, everybody. Welcome back to the podcast. Big E here. This is Law for Virginia Law Enforcement Officers, and it's episode 89. Today, we're talking about reckless driving. This was a topic that one of our listeners suggested, asking, hey, can you talk about the standards for what is and isn't reckless driving? It's confusing. The judges seem to rule differently depending on who the judge is or the jurisdiction. And I think it was a really great suggestion. So thank you to the listener who suggested this idea. As it turns out, it's also timely because there's a case that just came out of the Court of Appeals just a couple of weeks ago from Suffolk, Virginia, called Jones versus Suffolk. And it's a case where the Court of Appeals addressed the question of whether or not driving was in a crash was reckless or not. So I think it's a great opportunity for us to talk about what does it mean that somebody's, you know, that somebody's driving is reckless driving, especially in the context of a crash? So often when I was a prosecutor, I would see people charged with reckless driving and the court would either reduce it to improper driving or dismiss it. And oftentimes when the court would dismiss it, they would say, oh, this is a Powers case. Or the defense attorney would say, oh, this is a Powers case. And I think a lot of officers just kind of shrugged their shoulders and said, I don't really understand what these rules are. I don't understand what they're talking about. You know, this was a really bad crash and it seemed like it was reckless driving. What's going on? So let's talk a little bit about what reckless driving is in Virginia. Reckless driving is charged usually under the code section 462.852. And that's sort of the general rule in Virginia that makes it unlawful to drive recklessly. So it says, the code section says, irrespective of the maximum speeds, so we're not talking about reckless driving by speed, but just regular driving, any person who drives a vehicle on a highway recklessly or at a speed or in a manner as to endanger the life, limb, or property of another person shall be guilty of reckless driving. So that's just simply driving recklessly, right? Or at a speed that endangers another person, that's considered to be reckless driving. That's sort of the rule under 852. And then there's also 853, which is the not having proper control, reckless driving improper control code section. And that's driving a vehicle which is not under proper control or which has inadequate or improperly adjusted brakes. So in other words, driving a car and just not holding onto the steering wheel, right? And, you know, query whether that would be reckless driving anyway, probably would be. And the penalty for reckless driving is it's a class one misdemeanor. Now, even though it's a class one misdemeanor, I would note that it is a traffic offense. So it's under 46.2 and not 18.2. If, you know, under 18.2, for example, DUI is under 18.2. That means that DUI is a criminal offense. So you can commit DUI anywhere. There's no limitation in the DUI code section that says it has to be on a public highway, right? You can commit DUI on a, you know, on a farm, on a private property, in your own driveway. 46.2, though, is limited to traffic offenses. So as a general matter, reckless driving is going to be an offense I commit on a public highway. Now, we'll see that there's a code section that specifically talks about parking lots, right? So 46.2.864 says you're guilty of reckless driving if you drive at a speed if you operate a vehicle at a speed or in a manner that endangers the life, limb, or property of another person on a driveway or on the premises of a church, school, recreation facility, or business or governmental property that is open to the public, or on the premises of an industrial establishment providing parking space for customers, patrons, or employees, or on any highway or under construction or not yet open to the public. So we do see, you know, here a number of different, different possible non-public reckless driving code sections, right, that involve not just public highways but other places. But as a general matter, most of your reckless driving cases are going to involve public highways. And I'm going to focus on the reckless driving code section that talks about just reckless driving generally, driving recklessly, and also the excessive speed code section. But I would note that over the years, we've had a lot of different reckless driving code sections be added to the code. We have, for example, reckless driving passing on or at the crest of a grade or on a curve, right? So if you're going into a blind curve and you pass somebody, that's considered to be reckless driving under 854. Driving with an obstructed view or with your control impaired, right, that's reckless driving under 855. And remember, that's different than the obstructed view code section. Right, this is a specific one that says you're guilty of reckless driving when you drive it when it's so loaded or when they're front or when there are in the front seat so many people that it obstructs the view to the front or the side of the vehicle. So you have, you know, a couch tied to the front, the front of your car or something like that, so you can't see, right? That would be another form of reckless driving. Passing two vehicles abreast under 856 or passing two abreast in a single lane or 857. We'll talk about that in a minute. Passing somebody at a railroad grade crossing under 858 is reckless driving. Passing a stopped school bus, we see a lot of that under 859. But there's also failing to give proper signal under 860. A person shall be guilty of reckless driving who fails to adequately and timely signal intention to turn, partly slow down, or stop. And so, again, we see these different code sections. But, you know, the reckless driving charge that I think we see most often, other than just regular reckless driving, is either driving too fast, right, exceeding the speed limit under 862, and that's driving 20 miles per hour or more in excess of the applicable speed limit, or driving more than 85 miles per hour anywhere that you happen to be, right? So if the speed limit is 65, if the speed limit is 70 and you're going 86, you're not 20 over, but that's over 85 miles per hour, so that's inherently reckless driving. If you're driving 66 in a 45 zone, that's reckless driving because it's more than 20 miles per hour over. And that's under 462, 862, and of course we see that all the time. But under 861, driving anywhere too fast for highway or traffic conditions is also reckless driving. And you could see that maybe in a rainstorm. We'll see a case example of that from Hanover County in a minute, where the person's not speeding, but they're driving so fast that they hydroplane and crash. You know, driving too fast in a snowstorm. We'll see that in a case as well in a moment where somebody's driving too fast. So again, that's another form of reckless driving, and that's sort of on this long list of different kinds of reckless driving that we have. There's failure to yield right-of-way under 863, and then you have, of course, the racing codes under 865. So lots of different reckless drivings we have in the code, but of course, again, the focus for today, what we're really going to talk about is what is reckless driving generally, right? What does that mean? Well, there is, you know, the case that people cite all the time is this Powers case. And the Powers case is a case from the Virginia Supreme Court in 1970. And it's important for a lot of reasons. But, you know, one of the things that the Powers case does is just sort of describe what reckless driving is. And what the court said back then, and it's still the rule today, is that the term recklessly imparts a disregard by the driver for the consequences of his act and an indifference to the safety of life, limb, or property. And so for the court here, and the court writes, the essence of the offense of reckless driving lies not in the fact of, in the act of operating the vehicle, but in the manner and circumstances of its operation. And since then, the court has come up with sort of a list of things in the totality of the circumstances that you look at in trying to figure out whether somebody is driving recklessly or not. And the courts have said over the years that multiple factors can indicate recklessness, including erratic driving, the likelihood of injury to other users of the highways, loss of control of a vehicle, driving in excess of the speed limit, dangerous driving behavior, intoxication, and noncompliance with traffic markers. So notice here that these are things that you can also charge separately, right? So somebody being intoxicated, that might make them guilty of DUI. It also might make them guilty of reckless driving, right? And so you could, you know, have somebody who, for example, might be not a 0.08 or maybe a 0.04 or 0.05, but that level of intoxication plus the driving might make it reckless driving, or it could also make it DUI, of course, as well. And so you see lack of control of the vehicle or getting involved in a crash, but it's important to note, and we're going to talk about this in a moment, that the mere fact that there is a crash, that there's an accident, doesn't necessarily give rise to an inference of reckless driving. It's the facts and circumstances that led to the crash. That's what's crucial, right? That's what we have to look at. And in addition, merely driving fast is not reckless driving unless the person is driving in a way that endangers the life, limb, or property of another person. Right? Now, of course, under reckless driving by speed, which is the code section about that says, you know, I'm exceeding 20 miles per hour over, I'm going more than 85 miles per hour. Essentially there, the code is making a presumption to saying when you go more than 20 miles per hour, the speed limit, when you go over 85 miles per hour, that's so inherently dangerous that it does endanger life, limb, or property, right? If you have a blowout, if a deer jumps out in front of the car, suddenly you can't control the vehicle and you have a problem. So the code tells you that that is true, but otherwise, simply driving fast or simply getting into a crash, an accident of some kind, does not necessarily indicate that you're reckless. On the other hand, I want to note that reckless is not necessarily something that is done, I know this sounds stupid, but you know, intentionally. In other words, that somebody is reckless because they make a decision to do something. And so, for example, you have in Conrad versus Commonwealth, the court finding that sleeping or falling asleep in your car is reckless driving. So again, that's something that you do not voluntarily, but involuntarily. And nevertheless, the court says that that's considered to be reckless driving. And so if all that's reckless, then what's this offense of improper driving? Because we know that under 462.869, that there is also this idea of improper driving, right? That a trial, well, what that code section does is sort of a funny thing. Improper driving doesn't really have a definition, so to speak. In other words, it's not like somebody's found guilty of improper driving because their driving is something short of reckless in a way that I could define for you. Here's what the code section actually says. What it says is, notwithstanding the foregoing provisions, the whole reckless driving code section, upon the trial of any person charged with reckless driving, where the degree of culpability is slight, the court may in its discretion find the accused not guilty of reckless driving, but guilty of improper driving. And the Commonwealth also can reduce the charge to improper driving as well if they wish to. So that's a traffic infraction of only $500. So it's not a class one misdemeanor like reckless driving is. So notice here, you can never, and of course you know this, but you can't ever charge somebody with improper driving. You can't write a ticket for improper driving because it's not really a charge at all. And there's no standard of proof for improper driving. In other words, there's nothing that says that here's what improper driving is versus here's what reckless driving is. It basically allows the court to say, well, this is a close case, so I'm going to find you guilty of improper. It puts all the discretion in the hands of the court, but there's no definition for it at all, just something the court can do. So again, let's talk about it a little bit more, you know, here powers, you hear oftentimes judges will say, oh, this is a powers case. Defense attorneys will say this is a powers case. Well, what is the powers case, right? The powers case is a case from going all the way back to 1970 to Goochland, Virginia, where Mr. Powers is driving a 1967 Plymouth all by himself, driving around. They've been driving around all night with some other friends. There were some other people in other cars. And he gets involved in a crash, a single vehicle crash. He's found lying in a ditch on off a highway. There's nobody else there. Nobody sees what happened. And a state trooper responds. A state trooper does some accident reconstruction, 1970, but he's still doing some accident reconstruction. He reconstructs the path of the vehicle from the impressions left on the highway and the marks left on some trees. And he's able to reconstruct that the vehicle left the road and traveled off the road for about almost 1,000 feet then went off the road. It hit two trees that were about 20 feet apart and then came to rest in a ditch on the side of the highway. The motor is actually ripped out of the car and it's found 36 feet away from where the vehicle had crashed. And so, you know, it's out of control for, again, about 1,000 feet. And the speed limit in that area is about 55 miles an hour. It's a dry night. There's no rain. There's nothing like that. There's no defects in the roadway. The night is clear. There's no traffic signs or anything like that. There's no one else around. So, you know, is that reckless driving? Well, we know a lot about the crash, but what we don't know in this case is what is it that caused the crash to happen? And that's the trouble for the court. Here the court says recklessly, again, is a disregard by the driver for the consequences of his acts and an indifference to the safety of life, limb, or property. And here, the court says the mere crash, again, itself doesn't give rise to a presumption of reckless driving. The court writes, we have no way of determining from the evidence in this record how and why the accident happened. The momentum of the automobile and its erratic course may be attributed to the accelerator sticking or a defect in the car's steering mechanism. The defendant might have suffered a sudden illness, or he might have been confronted by a sudden emergency that wasn't caused by his own negligence. We don't know, and there's no evidence in this case about what caused this crash. And so the court finds him not guilty. Now, if you contrast that with the Jones versus Suffolk case from just a couple of weeks ago, this is a case where the defendant's driving an 18-wheel truck carrying farm animals in its trailer, and he fails to negotiate a turn safely as the road curves to the left. His truck flips over on the side. There, we have witnesses who say, speed limit's 55, and going into the curve, both witnesses say he was driving kind of fast. He was going fast. An officer shows up on the scene, takes a look at the tire marks, figures out where the tire marks leave the road, and that the defendant didn't appear to use his brakes prior to the crash, so he just goes straight off the road. And here the trial court finds Mr. Jones guilty, and the Court of Appeals agrees and says, yeah, here in this case, right, witnesses report seeing him driving fast before overturning, which is evidence that he was speeding. And there you have the speeding plus the crash plus the curve. Even if he's not exceeding the speed limit, and I'll be clear, he's found guilty of regular reckless driving here, not driving by excessive speed, but he's driving too fast for the conditions, and as a result, he can't maintain control of the truck, filled with heavy cargo, veering off the road and crashing. And so the court found that that was sufficient evidence of reckless driving. LaBarge versus Commonwealth is another excellent example here of somebody who's not necessarily speeding, but driving in a manner that's reckless. And LaBarge is a really tragic case. He's found guilty of both involuntary manslaughter and reckless driving. He's driving a tractor trailer again at high speeds during a violent storm. There's a flash flood warning in effect. Several inches of rain have fallen. There's a high wind warning, 25 mile to 35 mile per hour winds, gusts of 40 mile per hour. There are poor visibility. There's a tropical storm. And so here the defendant, who's an experienced truck driver, passes two emergency vehicles that have their lights and sirens activated. He doesn't move out of the way, so he's already violated 46-829. He then changes lanes to move closer to a fire engine that's parked visibly on the side of the road. The fire crew was working at another crash scene. And he's driving about 60, 65 miles per hour, which is the speed limit on the road. But due to the conditions, he hydroplanes, he hits the fire truck, knocks over the fire truck. It traps a firefighter underneath and kills him. And here, again, the court says, the court looks at this and says, yeah, this is evidence not just of involuntary manslaughter, but also reckless driving in this case. The court says his speed alone is reckless driving under the circumstances of the weather, and also he doesn't get out of the way. He doesn't move over when he passes the rescue vehicles. But again, he's changing lanes near a fire engine under adverse driving conditions, and he's an experienced driver who has to know the risk of hydroplaning. He knew or should have known that his acts or omissions created substantial risk of harm to others, and that he displayed a reckless disregard for the consequences of his conduct and an indifference to the safety of others. So again, here, recklessness, right? Didn't intentionally kill anybody, didn't want to kill anybody, but he was reckless. And so this case from 2022 results in a conviction. Going back a year before, we have a case called Commonwealth versus Cady. And Cady was a very controversial case when it came out of the Court of Appeals. It was very confusing. The facts of the case are themselves a little bit troubling, a little confusing. It's the middle of a beautiful day. There's really hardly any vehicles on the road. The defendant is driving down the street again. He's driving a truck, and he strikes and kills a motorcyclist. The motorcycle is stopped directly in front of the defendant in his lane. He was clearly within his view. The motorcyclist had his left turn signal on. He was waiting to make a left turn. The defendant's story was he didn't see the motorcycle. He just didn't remember hitting him. He hits him. He has no indication of inattentiveness, intoxication, or fatigue. He tells the officer he's traveling at a constant speed. He's going the speed limit, about 2 miles over the speed limit. He's not swerving. There's no indication of distractions. He's not using his, he was not using his phone. They look at it. He had music on. That's about it. It seemed to be what the defendant contended was it was situational blindness. In other words, he just not noticing that this motorcycle is there. And he's found guilty of reckless driving. The Court of Appeals reverses the conviction and it goes to the Virginia Supreme Court, who reaffirm and reinstate the conviction for reckless driving. And the court here kind of focuses on what is it that's reckless, right? It is a reckless disregard by the driver for the consequences of his actions and an indifference to the safety, life, limb, or property of other people. And so we're not talking about simple negligence here, right? Making a mistake that leads to a crash. Most crashes are a result of some kind of negligence, right? Just misjudging a turn, misjudging somebody else's driving, some kind of simple mistake. You're not following a duty of care. Negligence is violating your duty of care to other people, but it's not quite recklessness, right? Now, there is really serious recklessness, and that's the kind of recklessness that's required for felony involuntary manslaughter. So that's gross, wanton, and culpable negligence. But here, again, the objective standard here is the standard that we have talked about since, you know, Powers, since 1970, right? It's the idea that somebody shows a disregard for the consequences of their actions and indifference to the safety, life, limb, or property of other people. And so oftentimes the court here says what distinguishes a speeding violation from reckless driving and the misdemeanor, misdemeanor from the felony of involuntary manslaughter, reckless driving from felony involuntary manslaughter, is oftentimes the likelihood of injuries to others as a result of your actions, right? How dangerous, how truly dangerous are your actions? But here, this is not a split-second momentary failure to keep a lookout that we would normally call negligence. That court here says this is a lengthy, total, and complete failure to keep a lookout. And if you have such a lengthy, total, and complete failure to keep a lookout, then you're guilty of reckless driving in violation of 462.852, which is the basic reckless driving code section and the one that he's found guilty of in this case. And so we see lots of cases like, you know, they sort of construe the statute this way. Lillard versus Commonwealth has a case from Spotsylvania from 2015. It's another tractor-trailer case, and it seems like a theme here, where he's driving a tractor-trailer, and he's driving in the left lane of I-95. And he changes lane, strikes another car, and sends it off the road, and doesn't stop. He says, just like in the Cady case, I didn't know I hit anybody. I didn't realize I was doing that. He says he didn't even realize he was in the left lane and that he wouldn't have changed out of the left lane striking anybody else because, of course, it would have been dangerous if I did that. He's found guilty of reckless driving. And again, the court here says, yeah, you can't be in the left lane, first of all, in that part of 95 under 462.803.1. You can't be in that lane. You know that you can't engage in this maneuver. You acknowledge that maneuver would have been dangerous. So that's considered to be reckless driving. In Blevins versus Commonwealth, this is a case from 2014 where the defendant's convicted of reckless driving. And he says, he complains, you know, okay, well, why wasn't the jury instructed on improper driving? At best, I was improperly driving. The defendant in this case was trying to pass a car on the right on an interstate. He struck another vehicle and he killed a passenger in that other vehicle on a rainy night. And the vehicles have been traveling together on the highway. He's going about 75 to 80 miles per hour. And he says, look, it's not my fault. I lost control of the car. It's not due to any recklessness, but, you know, it was a rainy night. It was going fast. And the court said, no, that's what you just described is reckless driving. You're driving too fast at night in the rain. No, you weren't going more than 80 miles an hour, which at the time was the limit for reckless driving. No, you weren't going more than 20 miles over the speed limit. But driving in the rain at that speed is too fast under the conditions. And you're driving aggressively, right, passing this person on a right in a manner that causes you to lose control of the vehicle. And again, here the court says you don't get to you know, improper driving isn't a standard. Improper driving isn't something that's defined under the code where something, you know, here's how you know this is reckless versus here's how you know this is improper. Improper driving is something that a trial judge can do, can give somebody a conviction for, can say, you know what, this is a close call. I'm going to make the decision as a judge to give you a break and give you improper driving, even though otherwise it would be reckless driving. And that's something the code allows judges to do, but it's not something that a jury can do. It's not something that's contained in the law. It's not something that's defined. So here the court says you can't ask a jury for an improper driving instruction. And you know, a couple other examples I think are worth looking at in Berger versus Commonwealth. Berger is a case where the defendant's driving, excuse me, drinking is a factor in the finding for reckless driving. Here, actually, in Berger, it's interesting. It's a case from Fauquier County from 2013. The court gives him the break and finds him guilty of improper driving. But again, because it's not a legal standard, the Court of Appeals has to look at it and say, well, would it be, you know, reckless? Because reckless driving and improper driving are basically the same legal standard. It's just that a court can reduce reckless driving to improper. So in this case, he's involved in a crash. It's a single vehicle crash, just like the Powers case. Police and fire show up. He leaves the scene, but a police officer stops him, brings him back, and he detects an odor of alcohol about his person. He says, I drank a few beers, but he says, I hit a patch of water, hydroplaned into the median, and he's charged with reckless driving. They can't prove a DUI in this case, but they can prove that he had consumed alcohol. And the court here says, yeah, I mean, there's no other explanation for the crash in this case. And so in this case, just like in Powers, right, if we can't point to what it is that the defendant did or didn't do, what his decisions were, what the reason for the crash was, we just know that he hits a patch of water and hydroplanes in the median. Court says that's neither improper driving nor reckless driving. And again, he's consumed alcohol, but there's no indication that the alcohol plays a role in the crash. And so the court reverses the conviction. So notice again, right, if I have no explanation for the crash, if I can't point to driving behavior on the part of the defendant, then the mere fact of a crash alone isn't going to get me a conviction that will stand from the court. So, you know, again, you know, what is the difference here? What's the difference between improper driving and reckless driving? And how do I prove a reckless driving case, especially when the defendant doesn't say anything, right? I think a really good example of kind of how you go about proving a reckless driving case is in Crest versus Commonwealth. And Crest is a case from 2003. It's a case from Fairfax County where the defendant, it was a very busy day on I-95 in the HOV lanes of I-95. The road is dry, the road is clear, but there's a lot of heavy traffic and people are going about 45 miles an hour. And around the Lorton exit in Fairfax County, traffic then just comes to a complete stop, as it often does in bumper-to-bumper traffic. And then suddenly here comes the defendant and crashes into a set of three different vehicles. One, two, three. Boom, boom, boom. Just hits the cars one after another. And the crash is a very severe crash. One of the cars is the middle car is sent out of the lane of travel, crosses the right lane of traffic, and spins to the other side of the road and faces the other way. And that vehicle is absolutely totaled. The other vehicles are also severely damaged in this case. The first and the third cars were first forced out of their travel lanes and into the shoulder and into the right lane. And then the second car was not only sent into the other train, it was actually flipped over. So it was flipped over and faced the opposite direction of travel. So again, really significant damage, really significant crash, high speed. And what's the reason for that? Why is it so severe? Well, we have testimony at trial from witnesses who had seen him driving about 15 miles before, as the witness described, at a very excessive speed, much faster than 70 miles per hour, which was how fast the other drivers who saw him driving saw him drive. They said that he drove within 3 feet of a bumper of one of the cars and then passed erratically. he was driving dangerously close to other cars. He passes them at this, you know, again, the same distance, you know, 2 to 3 feet. Very, very dangerous driving witnessed by other drivers on the scene. And so with all that in mind, here the court says again, you know, what's the standard for reckless driving? Well, here, irrespective of the maximum speed, any person who drives recklessly or in a speed that endangers the life, liberty, and property of another is guilty of reckless driving. And here, you know, the speed that everybody else is going is 45 miles per hour, irrespective of the maximum speed on the road, because there was just so much traffic. And so, although the crash itself doesn't give rise to an inference of reckless driving, physical factors associated with impact, including the extent of damage to vehicles and property, were for the court here, mute evidence of high speed. In other words, mute evidence of the recklessness. And so when you consider the massive damage that he caused and the fact that it was a clear day and all the drivers in court testified, we could all see that it was heavy traffic. We could all see it was coming to a stop. It was clear for miles that this was, you know, traffic that was coming to a spot. If you combine that with the earlier aggressive driving behavior, the proper inference is that the defendant is not operating in a way that is safe, and that is the cause of the crash. And so the court affirms the conviction. So again, we don't have any statements from the defendant, but I think you have a good, some good evidence here that the defendant is guilty of reckless driving. So I hope today was interesting. I hope it was helpful. It was a little different. We don't, you know, usually do Fourth Amendment or search and seizure, use of force, that kind of stuff. But this was a special request, and I hope you liked it. If you like the podcast, tell your friends. We're on Stitcher. We're on SoundCloud, which is a website, Apple Podcasts. I am going to try to get on Spotify. I'm going to give that a shot probably later this summer, see if I can get them on there. But for today, that's all from me. That's all from Big E. Stay safe, and don't get captured.